I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the flagship edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller, and this is the best of PW Torch livecast for Friday, October 13th, 2017. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for your support of the PW Torch livecast. Today's handpicked selection is from May of 2014. It is a Jim Ross interview clocking in at 72 minutes. And what's amazing about this is this interview is actually 4 hours long. But we're bringing you the first 72 minutes this week, and we'll bring you the next segment next week. And it's a really good interview. I think it's the first time that we interviewed Jim Ross on the PW Torch livecast. I'd interviewed him a lot over the years in the 1990s for Torch Talks a number of times and into the 2000s. But this was the longest podcast interview that he might have ever done. And it is a good one. A lot of topics covered here, including a discussion about whether he ever said no to humiliating ideas, embarrassing segments that were proposed for him when he was in WWE. He talks about life after WWE, doing Q&A shows in theaters, the launch of WWE Network, Chris Benoit's son getting into wrestling. Does Chris Benoit belong in the Hall of Fame? And how does he feel about his role in presenting Diesel and Razor Ramon, the imposter versions of them, that is, on Raw many years ago, back in the late 90s. So a lot of cool topics in this. Bruce Mitchell joined me for this edition of the PW Torch livecast back on May 2nd, 2014. So he's part of this discussion. If you can't wait to listen to the rest of this, you can go VIP and go to the PW Torch livecast archives. Every episode of the livecast is available in our PW Torch livecast section on the VIP website. It's easy to scroll through, and you can search for certain names on each of the long listings year by year through the livecast and pick out past interviews and big events and news stories and wrestling personalities that you'd like to hear us talk about from the last nearly 8 years that the PW Torch livecast has been on the air. I also want to note that if you have not yet, be sure to subscribe to my new podcast that split off from the PW Torch livecast. I'm now on Podcast One. All of my new free podcasts are exclusively on Podcast One now, and those are available if you search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or Wade Keller on any app that you listen to podcasts on. So just do a search for Wade Keller and a blue logo with my face on it and the big letters Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast should be there, and click subscribe. It is free, and if you haven't done so yet, you ought to, especially because it features my new interview with Jim Ross. I interviewed him yesterday for 2 hours, and the first hour of that interview is available today on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available exclusively through Podcast One. And you can subscribe again in Apple Podcasts or anywhere you find podcasts, or you can do it from the Podcast One app or podcastone.com. Just search Wade Keller in the search box. I've got some good interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks, part two of the Jim Ross interview. And the week after that, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. So you'll want to be on board for that. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast is 4 days a week. We cover Monday Night Raw in the early AM hours on Tuesday. That show drops. And then we cover SmackDown in the show that drops just a few hours after SmackDown goes off the air in the early AM hours on Wednesday. And then our flagship edition is now on Thursdays with some familiar voices from the Livecast lineup, along with my longtime podcast co-host, Jason Powell. And then Fridays is Interview Friday, a new interview every week. Tomorrow, Rich Fan takes over the hosting chair with a deep dive, and then it is Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks on Sunday. And then Monday, it is MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Tuesday, we take a breather. And then Wednesday, it is Wrestling Road Stories with Jim Valley. And then Thursdays, it's the post-impact edition of the PW Torch Livecast with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. All of those free weekly shows are available here at pwtorchlivecast.com, or you can get them with the ads and plugs removed as a VIP member. Get full details on VIP membership at pwtorch.com/goVIP. When you go VIP, you get access to all of the podcasts I do every week. I do about 15 or 16 podcasts per week. The only place you can hear all of them is as a PW Torch VIP member, and that includes exclusive weekly access to my conversations with Bruce Mitchell and Todd Martin in long-form podcasts that usually run about 2 hours total per week, plus the post-pay-per-view roundtables and other shows, retro radio shows going back to the 1990s, and much more, plus ad-free access to our pwtorch.com website, mobile and desktop, and access to 30 years of archives. So go check out details. It's been updated with the latest features that come with the VIP membership, and it's also updated with new testimonials from VIP members. So check it out. It is pwtorch.com/goVIP. And now we go to Jim Ross from May 2nd, 2014, part one of a four-hour interview that Bruce Mitchell and I conducted. Here we go. Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter since 1987. That's right, when Ronald Reagan was president, the first issue of Pro Wrestling Torch was published. I just thought of that last week, and I can't get over it. And also, here, host of the PW Torch Livecast, you can also find my writing and the Torch's reporting for this episode on Friday, May 2nd, 2014. I am very excited to have a first-time guest on Interview Friday, somebody who I have interviewed multiple times for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter over the years for our Torch Talk series, almost all of which I believe are available for VIP members in our archives, and that is good old JR, as he's often known, but I like to call him Jim Ross. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Wade. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for joining us today. It is very much appreciated. We've been looking forward to having you on the show, and I'm excited about it.
Good. I'm glad I could excite you.
Thank you. I'll quote you on Twitter. Jim, you have gotten into the podcasting world. I knew when I had been doing audio shows over the years. I joked with Steve Austin about this when he was on the show in November last year. You know, I knew when I've been watching you on Raw in front of millions of people and Steve Austin wrestle in front of, you know, millions of people all those years, that eventually you'd make it to the big time and start doing wrestling radio and podcasts. So welcome to the big time.
Well, it was a long journey, but we finally made it.
Yes, you did. Let's start with a plug for that. I was listening earlier today to your interview with Gail Kim and your commentary reacting to current events and also what listeners are having to say. You have followed in the footsteps of Colt Cabana, Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, and now you're in that group of some people with a lot of experience in professional wrestling doing weekly podcasts over at and your podcast, like Steve Austin's and Chris Jericho's, is at Podcast One. Give that a plug. Let people know where they can find it and what kind of show you do and why, if they're Livecast listeners, they should add your show to the mix.
Well, first of all, it's at podcastone.com, or you can get it at iTunes. It's free. Those are two good things that you need mm-hmm. to remember, podcastone.com, and it's free. And it's just, you know, it gives me the opportunity to express myself on what's on my mind. I call it a little segment I do at the beginning of the podcast. And it gives me the opportunity to interact with a lot of my friends and people that I haven't been in contact with, and I kind of use that podcast to reconnect with several of our guests. And I try to ask them – I just try to have civil conversations and ask some questions that I think that wrestling fans would ask themselves if they had the opportunity. So it's largely a pro wrestling show. I may add, I'm going to have some MMA guests as time goes on, some people in the UFC. I probably will have some NFL guys on that are wrestling fans. Then on the open and close, I may throw in a little football, but not a lot. It'll always still remain for that target audience of pro wrestling fans. It's catered to them. It's designed for them. And I like being able to produce my own show and get my own guests. And it's a fun thing. And I'm very surprised. Today I noticed it's number 5 in the iTunes sports chart. And I thought that was pretty decent considering that we do one show a week and a lot of the shows that were ahead of us do multiple shows a week. I'm not lobbying to do 2 or more at this point in time, but, for doing one show, it's holding its own very well. So for that, I thank everybody that downloads it and hope they'll give us a shot and try it out.
Very cool. I heard a chime in the background, which means we are joined by Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. Bruce, welcome to Livecast to co-host today with Jim Ross.
Good to be here, gentlemen.
Excellent. Jim, I want to start off by taking a couple phone calls from VIP members on the VIP Express line. And then, obviously, Bruce and I have a lot of topics we want to discuss with you. We also have some excellent email questions that we also want to fit into the show. So we'll just keep things moving rapidly and have a good time and express a lot of opinions here. And we'll begin with area code 917 on the VIP Express line. Please state your name and the city you're calling from. 917.
Hello?
Yep, that's you, 600. Hi. Yep.
Oh, Benny from New York.
Oh, great. Thanks, Benny. What have you got for Jim Ross today?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about David Benoit. Is that right?
Yep, of course.
He's because I know JR spoke about this not so long ago. He's making his wrestling debut in Calgary soon, and he seems determined to find some future in wrestling. And he recently spoke about, his dad should be in the Hall of Fame. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And actually, if I can, I have a question for you, Wade, about the network.
Yeah.
I have the network since day one. I enjoy it. And, I was pirating pay-per-views since 2007, and I jumped on the network now. And I'm just curious, if you've gotten a lot of emails or tweets of people, like me who are stopped pirating because of the network. That's basically all I got. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks, Benny. Yeah, I'll give a short answer and then throw to Jim on it. I think it's great that there is a price point that for people who just wanted to see him but couldn't afford or couldn't rationalize spending that kind of money, chose to do something, that they shouldn't have done, but access the shows for whatever rationalization or reasons they did without paying. I think it's great that there's a much larger number of people out there who are above board and paying money and contributing to, hopefully, although we got a lot of no comments yesterday, hopefully contributing to what wrestlers earn, not just the pocketbooks of investors in Wall Street for all the money going to the network. Jim, I have heard anecdotes about that from people who are now on board as paying customers for these Sunday specials. We can talk about David Benoit in a minute, but it's a good parlay into your thoughts on how the network is going and, give your opinion on that as a distribution model now and in the long term.
Well, I think long term it's going to work out well because we continue to get more in the digital age. If you'd asked me 2, 3, 4 years ago if I was going to get on Twitter, I would have asked you, what is Twitter? I was trying to lead a clean lifestyle. I don't know what getting on Twitter means. And plus, I'm a happily married man. So all those things have come to my mind. But here I am on Twitter. I just think it's a sign of the times. I think the digital aspect is a good format for them. You can access it virtually anywhere. I'm not disconnected very often, even when I fly, because the opportunity to have, the Wi-Fi on the airplane. So with all that said, I think it's good for the long haul. And I bought the network on the first day it was available without any problems. I don't know if I was in the minority or the majority, how that worked out. But I watch it basically, I don't really have a pattern on when I watch it. I like to know it's available to me whenever I want to watch it. But I can see where some people are – you know, a lot of the stuff on there is not new to me because I was, you know, I'm old. And but for young fans and fans that didn't experience the 80s or things like that, you know, I think it's pretty cool. So I'm a fan of it. I hope it works out well for everybody, and I think it's a really neat thing. And I'm thinking that this summer, as I spend more time outside, I'm going to probably watch it more on my iPad just sitting outside by the pool and hanging out. And so I'm looking forward to doing it in that regard.
I watched Elimination Chamber on WWE – or not Elimination Chamber. I watched the – actually, it had to be the WrestleMania pregame and the first-hour WrestleMania on my laptop outdoors. Before it got too cold here in Minnesota and moved indoors. I just did it for exactly the reason you kind of just brought up, like just for the novelty factor of being able to do something and carry that live show around in a way that I couldn't. Bruce, I want to say anytime that there's an issue or a follow-up you want to ask related to the topic we're talking about, feel free to jump in when there's a pause. Otherwise, we'll definitely throw to you for your own topics as the show goes on. We're not in the studio together, so I just want to get that bit of business out of the way. Jim, I do want to ask you, would you have voted for the network giving all pay-per-views away for that $9.95 price tag or $9.99, or would you have had some second guessing about going quite that far? Because I know there was a lot of talk about, will some pay-per-views all pay-per-views or just some pay-per-views be on the network? And as we see these numbers come in, I'm sure there's a little bit of internal, you know, people who said, oh, we shouldn't do that. And they look at the numbers. Some people are going, hey, it worked out well. I'm glad we did it. Other people going, no, we probably shouldn't have, or, you know, wait and see. Where would you come down on that?
Well, I would have, first of all, had to do my due diligence and study the numbers and really crunch them before I could make a definitive opinion or a statement on that. But I do think that adding the pay-per-views to their $9.99 price tag was probably the most attractive feature that you could do because it's very easy to do the math on, you know, $9.99 times 12 and then versus how many pay-per-views you watched a year. I know personally, I watch all their pay-per-views. I'm a good customer. I watch all the UFC pay-per-views too. So it's a neat deal, I think. I think it was a great sales tool, a great marketing thing for WWE to do the pay-per-views. I think it's a good idea. I just don't know. I don't have enough knowledge of how they crunch their numbers and all the other things like that to tell you, oh, it was a brilliant move. But I can tell you from a marketing standpoint, the simple basic marketing philosophy of doing the math on the pay-per-views is a really smart deal. I don't know what they could have added on it that would have made me want to buy it more than the fact that I also got the pay-per-views along with everything else on the network.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. I'm going to break in before we talk about David Benoit and talk about our sponsor, Sherry's Berries. We have a special going on headed into Mother's Day. Place to go is berries.com, berries.com. Click on the microphone and type in wrestling. All right, let's go back to the program. David Benoit, Jim, interesting question from Benny. Getting into wrestling, it's an interesting topic. One, he said he thinks his dad belongs in the Hall of Fame. Hey, he's his son, and I mean, you know, that's his opinion. But your perspective on David Benoit's potential in wrestling, how having that last name could help or hurt him, and if you know much about him and if you have an opinion on his prospects.
I met him a few times, but he was so much younger that it would not be fair for me to judge. He has aptitude and a great agility and athletic ability and, you know, an inherent, instincts for the business because I haven't seen him work. He always seemed like a quiet kid, which doesn't mean anything. Chris was basically a quiet guy. I am of the belief, and I will stick steadfast to this belief, that Chris Benoit would not want to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame simply because his induction would cause an amazing distraction. It would the issues of the last several hours of his life would be the focal point. And, you know, if it was just his wrestling ability and his journey in wrestling and, is he deserving? Of course. I mean, he was an amazing performer. But I think that when you get into that environment in the Hall of Fame, I think it would be a train wreck of his, you know, at his induction. So I think that knowing him as I did, that would not be what he wanted because he was really an old school. I mean, he was making guys clean up after themselves in the locker room, which probably doesn't even happen anymore, but. You know, I, I would have to. I've also would be disappointed in the kid if the kid didn't say, "My dad should be in the Hall of Fame." I mean, obviously he's going to think that, and he should. But I don't agree. So, and I hope that he does well. If this is his dream, everybody should be able to have a chance to live their dream. The last name, it's a hard one to say. I think as time moves on, the last name might not be a big issue. But right now, it might be still timely, or maybe the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear that name is murder-suicide, and that's not the most marketable trait that one could be known for.
Yeah, I think of Daniel Bryan, and I think of Nancy, and yeah, it's tough. Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com. Bruce, do you have anything to add or follow up on that?
I think both those things are going to be very difficult for him. You hope there's some other avenues for him to explore as he explores his chances in pro wrestling.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, let's go back to the phone lines and go to air code 952. I believe this is Brian. Please let us confirm your name and let us know what city you're calling from. This is, again, a VIP Express caller. Moved to the front of the line because he's a PW Torch VIP member.
And I've been doing so for over a year and a half and proud to do it. I'm calling from Bloomington, Minnesota. I'm inside the Mall of America, home of the first Nitro. I had two quick questions. One was an oddball, and one was something to hear Jim Ross elaborate on, which is a privilege to be hearing and speaking to you, Jim.
Thank you.
The first one is about the WCW rope. I understand that they were cables, and I know it's an odd question, but I was always interested in how that affected the talent. Can you speak about that at all in your time at WCW?
I think I don't know that it was a big issue. I think it's like the thing that would be analogous to it would be going from aluminum bats to wooden bats. You get used to it. It might be a minor adjustment when you first get in there. No different than the size of some rings. But I don't think it was ever a big. I've never heard it being a big issue. You know,
Jim, I heard when people went from WCW to the WWF in at least the early 90s in the old WWF rings that the top ropes in the WWF were less taut, and it was harder to do moves off the top rope because it wasn't all that common, I guess, you know, relatively speaking. Does that ring a bell? Because I think Sean Waltman has spoken to me about that.
I could see that being a factor, obviously. But I'm just saying from I got to WWE in 93, and I don't remember hearing it being a major issue.
Right.
Again, it's just something I think you get accustomed to and not a big thing. But, you know, I may be wrong about that, but I just don't think it was a major issue.
Brian, what else have you got for Jim?
The second question was in regards to the 1996 invasion by ECW. I've heard Jerry the King Lawler's thoughts on it during the ECW DVDs and such. I just wanted to know what Jim thought about it at the time, being in charge of talent relations and everything. And thank you so much, Goodall JR. It was a privilege. You guys have a good one.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. You're cast into a fictional television show, and you look at that was just a piece of creative, and I thought it. I had no issues with it. I didn't have any issues with ECW. A lot of those guys became real good friends, and we hired a lot of those guys. And so I had no issue with it at all. It was a kind of a novel idea. Seemed to pique some interest. It was a natural rivalry. So it seemed to me at the time to be pretty good television. I don't know how well the some guys may have taken themselves a little too seriously in the WWE locker room and the ECW locker room as far as a rivalry is concerned. I never looked at it that way, to be honest with you. So I thought it was fine. I had no issues with it whatsoever.
All right, great. Appreciate the call, Brian, and appreciate your PW Torch VIP membership. By the way, you can become a PW Torch VIP member by going to Pete every single week for just a small upcharge. All right, back to the phone lines. Let's go to area code 865. Stephen from Tennessee is calling on the VIP Express line. Stephen, thanks for being a VIP member. And what have you got for Jim Ross today?
Hey, guys. Hey Jim. Thanks for taking my call here. I've got a my question being this. I'm actually training right now to become a professional wrestler. And listening to your this past podcast that you had with Gail Kim, and you talked about the development of being a heel and being a face. And I just kind of got me thinking about something I've been going processing for a while. Do you think wrestling overall as a whole needs to go back to its roots to move forward? You know, the Attitude Era, as been said, has kind of just cashed in and all the deposits that wrestling had been doing for, you know, the 50 years up until that point, you know, as far as title changes and all of that. And so do you think that wrestling now kind of needs to go back to its roots for it to have the ability to move forward and maybe have another boom period?
Good question.
Well,
Jim, what do you think?
I think that the business needs to emphasize the fundamentals more. It's not unlike any other business or any other sport or any other form of entertainment. I think there are certain fundamental elements that can't be compromised. I think there are a lot of those elements that are compromised today by all wrestling promotions. And, of course, I'll get charged for being bitter and stuck in the 80s or the 70s or some other generation other than now. But the bottom line of it is that some of the fundamental aspects of the business are ignored. You know, you got to have rules for heels to break to help them become heels and maintain, you know, maintain their role, their cast, how they're cast in a production. The issue of, you know, a great heel is someone that you will pay money and travel to go see get beat and lose and pay their dues. You know,
and laugh at them or feel satisfaction
whatever.
That they've been humiliated. Yeah, whatever it is.
So I think some of those fundamentals are lax. So I'm a big believer that you know there are protagonists and antagonists. And I know that some people believe that nobody's totally good or totally bad, and there's a fine line and all these other cliches, and they're not a color, nobody's black or white, they're shades of gray and all these things, and I don't buy it. So so I do think that fundamentals are essential to get back to. In the how the product is presented, by and large, industry-wide, guys don't sell enough. Guys wrestle too quickly. People can't process all they're seeing. And if you can't, then you're losing your audience. If they can't catch a hold and suspend their disbelief and go along for the ride. So, I think I don't know if we have to go back in time and all that stuff, but I think the fundamentals that the business is built upon, that people are capitalizing on today in the various promotions, needs to be emphasized more.
I think you phrased it well, Jim, because I think a lot of people, you and I were actually going back and forth a little bit on Twitter with some of our followers on Twitter this afternoon before the show, and there were people saying, you know, tweeners are important to wrestling, and citing some wrestlers who were tweeners, and even claiming Steve Austin during this hot babyface run that he had in the late 90s in the boom period, that he was a tweener. And I kind of argued, I guess it comes down to what a definition of a tweener is, but to me, if you're cast as a wrestler who's supposed to get cheered against heels who you're supposed to take satisfaction in losing to, you're not a tweener. You're a babyface. But babyfaces don't all have to be Bob Backlund. You know, that there can
right.
be... And that's where I think people get confused when they say shades of gray. To me, sometimes when people advocate for shades of gray in characters, the way that gets executed takes away the core desire to see them either win or lose. And I think in the end, however somebody is cast, in the end the goal has to be that you're trying to get, in almost all cases, with rare exception, you want to have everyone either rooting for them to win or you want everyone rooting for them to lose. You don't want that ambivalence. And that's where I think when we say, you know, when people say, oh, go back in the time machine, you say go back to fundamentals. And I think that's a really good way to put it, because there's some fundamentals that make the pro wrestling genre work, and it's getting people to care about the outcome of a match, not, as you talked about on your podcast this week, in the lead-up to Gail Kim being your guest, not just getting people to chant, this is awesome, and holy shit, and that kind of thing.
Right.
Because then they're just reacting to, I thought you're totally right, they're just reacting to high spots in a match, but that means they're not engaged in who wins or loses. And one final point I want to throw back to you for some thoughts on it. It's like, to me, the This Is Awesome chant is like cheering a slam dunk in a basketball game. It's okay to do it, but what you want ultimately in the end is the fans to be really, really excited about their team winning or really sad that their team lost. So you can have a little pop for a high spot, but in the end, if that's there, absent of the fans invested in the outcome, you're not even 10% of the way of where you want to end up.
Yep, I agree. You know, it's not going back to wool tights and the baby faces wear white tights and the heels wear black tights.
Yeah,
we're not talking that. We're just talking fundamental. But that's fundamentals are imperative. As fundamentals of parroting, fundamentals of football. I'm a fundamental guy. I think there are certain. Everything's got to have its foundation.
Yeah.
And there are foundations to every entity. And you start chipping away at the foundation or taking shortcuts when you're building a new foundation, then the structure is not going to be sturdy. And it's not going to last. So that's where I am on that deal. Fundamentals is all I'm talking about. Not going back to a two-camera shoot and a stick mic.
Right. I think Bill Watts had that in mind when he became WSWVP, and it didn't work out for a lot of reasons that we don't have time to get into now. That's a whole two-hour show. But I think he really did want that. In the ill-fated move of wanting to ban moves off the top rope, he was doing that not because he didn't want there to be high spots, even though we kind of missed out on a little bit of evolution of what fans were looking for by the time he got that job, but he did it because of what you said. There had to be rules to break. And
yeah, that's it.
It was behind the times in the sense that heels weren't the ones going off the top rope at the time. Baby faces were. But I get the spirit of what he was saying, and I think there's a real lesson to be learned from Bill Watts' intent when he did take over that job a little over 20 years ago.
Yeah, being thrown over the top rope was a spot that gave the heels an opportunity to get some heat. It was taking the match away made it look like it was a more violent, physical, athletic entity. All small nuances, but when you put all the good nuances together, you generally can get a pretty good product. Well, I will agree with you that the most of the guys that are doing off the top rope stuff were the baby faces, but the issue was coming off the top rope put athletes in more danger.
Yeah.
And that's what you wanted to try to create was that danger element in the process and the presentation. And it might have been some of them might have been ill timed. You know, it's easy to go back and look at it now, but I think a lot of people at the time certainly misjudged the motive.
Yeah, yep. If you're joining us midstream here, Jim Ross, who I argue is the greatest play-by-play man in professional wrestling history, I think Gordon Solie's probably the only other person in that conversation for people who lived through his peak era. Bruce, is there a third candidate for best play-by-play man?
Lance Russell from Memphis.
Yeah, I was thinking Lance Russell more as an interviewer. And play-by-play, I think he's probably a solid three. As an overall announcer, I got Lance in that top three, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good man, yep. Good man. Bob Caudle was very underrated. I work with Bob, and Bob was very talented. It's hard for a play-by-play guy to find their timing and their stride as a color broadcaster on a television show. And my role was to do the play-by-play by design, how it's produced, and Bob became my partner, and I would really love working with Bob. You know, our goal was always to put the talent over. We didn't have any untimely bickering sessions, and now I've had some good bickering sessions with guys, but the best ones were when when they were not ill times, and it didn't distract from the presentation in the ring.
Right.
But Bob was really good, and is one of my favorite people I've ever worked with.
Jim, do you find?
Grew up watching. I mean, I grew up watching Bob Caudle do play-by-play, you know, for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and he was very good and very smooth in a time where you were looking for that next-door neighbor, solid person to call you, to be your broadcaster and to call things. And he was there. He was a very good wrestling commentator. I mean, wrestling play-by-play announcer.
And we're not saying there's only been three or four good ones, but in terms of the elite who had a long-term track record in a successful territory that did good business, you know, Mark Lawrence had his moments. Mick Karsh on the indie scene has done really good work. It's a long list of good announcers, but Jim Ross has some great calls. And as the show progresses here, I'm going to pull out some we ran a Twitter contest, and we'll be announcing the winners next week, where people could tweet hashtag Sherry's Berries, and include at PW Torch, our Twitter handle, in the comments, and list their favorite Jim Ross moment, a calling action, either a match or a big angle. And I'll be throwing some of those at you a little bit later in the show, Jim, and get your reaction, some quick thoughts and memories on some of them that readers tweeted. You can follow us on Twitter, by the way, at PWTorch. You can follow me at the Wade Keller. And Jim, of course, you can follow at JRSBBQ?
That's it.
Cool.
JRSBBQ, pretty simple.
Jim, I want to ask more about announcing, but I do want to, here at the midpoint of the show, roughly, to talk to you about your touring and doing live interaction and Q&A with wrestling fans on tour, and you've got a date coming up in Toronto also. Talk about how that came about, how many shows you've done, and how that experience is different than maybe you anticipated before you started on the project.
Well, the idea came about kind of indirectly through Brett the Hitman Hart. He had made a tour in the UK with a promoter there, and the promoter had mentioned to Brett that he would like to bring me over to do spoken word tours, they call them. And Brett got a hold of me with the promoter's information. We exchanged some emails, and I put him in contact with Barry Bloom, who's representing me, and they worked out the details for four one-night stands in the UK last summer. And I told Barry, he said, well, he said, I think this is really going to be something we're going to want to pursue. I said, well, there's two things about it. One is, if I'm any good at it, I'll consider pursuing it. And if I have fun doing it, I'll consider pursuing it. So I go do the four shows, and it really was a good experience. I had a lot of fun. And the ability to interact with a live crowd is kind of like doing a stage play or doing live Monday Night Raw back in the day. There's no net, no retakes, so here we are, and then surrounded by fans, and then the interaction. I found out that the most stimulating part of the performance that I do are the Q&As, and the fans have things on their mind. They have things they want to talk about, and I am no question is off limits. You paid your money. You're kind enough to come to my show. Ask whatever you choose. I'm not so egocentric that I make up an answer if I don't know. I'll just tell them I don't know. Or if they ask an opinion and they don't necessarily agree with my opinion, I don't know if either one of us are actually wrong because you're asking for someone's opinion. So I did that, and then when I left WWE in September, we had an offer. Barry negotiated with Live Nation, and Live Nation owns Ticketmaster, and Live Nation owns a bunch of venues like House of Blues and things of that nature. So Live Nation signed me up, and we did a show in New York City. I did two shows in New York City, two shows in New Orleans during WrestleMania week. We've got one coming up May 9th, next Friday, in Toronto at the Danforth Music Hall. Then we got one coming up on Saturday, May 31st. It's the day before a WWE pay-per-view in Chicago. I'll be at the House of Blues in Chicago. That's an afternoon show, a 2 o'clock show in Chicago on the May 31st, last day of May. And of course, tickets are at Ticketmaster, hence Live Nation on Ticketmaster kind of helps. So it's really a cool package deal there. And I'm probably not going to work as many shows as the promotion would like for me to. They'd like for me to work about one a week, one a week, and I'm really not anxious to go on the road that much. And my wife has kind of encouraged me to not make that decision, you know. So I get it. So I'm going to do one a month. But then when football season comes in September, I'm done doing Saturday shows because I'm going to go watch OU play football, Oklahoma University. So I don't do the shows because I just got to have that payday. I do the shows because I have fun. I enjoy working with and in front of the fans. I still consider myself a fan, not a celebrity, for God's sakes. I started out as a fan. I'm going to die as a fan. So I have fun doing them. I like the Q&As. I like the meet and greets. We've kind of redone my contract a little bit because they were wanting me to do the meet and greets in a shorter period of time once they saw how I did a meet and greet. And I'm not going to do a cattle call.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sign things with my head down and disregard people or not want to take a picture or not personalize an autograph. I think that's bullshit. I'm not doing it. So we extend more time for the meet and greets because I'm just not going to blow people off who paid the most money. It makes no sense. It's bad marketing, bad promotion, and I still got that promoter in me in that regard. So that's kind of the genesis of it, and I'm having a blast doing them. Probably in 2015 we'll start in January, and we may move to one every 3 weeks because we have a lot of places that that want me to play their room, and then I can slow down a little bit by the time football season rolls around. So it's a great experience. I'm having fun with it. It kind of gives me that performance feel back, you know, where I can have a little fun in that regard. And so I'm very blessed with this deal. It came along at the right place, the right time, and it's been a real neat deal for me. So between the podcast, being able to exercise my creativity, what creativity I have, which is arguable, and the one-man shows, you know, it's been a real good creative release for me. And then down in New Orleans, you know, Jim Cornette says, well, I want to come to your show. So, I'll put you on. I'll just put you on the show. So he comes out, and we do the Q&As together on the first show. And then Steve Stone Cold says, I want to come to your show. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to do a run-in because, you know, if you're going to be in the building, you need to come out and do the Q&As with him. Let's do it. So a little bonus thing for the fans. And, you know, I'm probably going to have a few surprises in Toronto, a few surprises in Chicago. But it's a fun thing for me at this stage of my life to be able to go back out and interact with the fans and to be creative again. And I'm having a blast doing it. So that's a story on the one-man show.
So that's May 9th in Toronto at Danforth Music Hall. Tickets available on Ticketmaster. Just enter Jim Ross in the search box to find it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I think that's all you do. And they'll be available at the venue, at both venues, the day of the show. So if somebody is procrastinating, they haven't been paid yet or whatever, don't know what you want to do, if you decide you want to come the day of the show, the venue in Toronto is the biggest one we booked. It's about 1,000 seats. So we should have plenty of room there. And the venue in Chicago, I think they told me the capacity for that one was about 800. And those are big crowds for this type of show. So we'll have room if you decide late you want to come. So that encourages the walk-up because sometimes people think automatically, well, I did get my tickets early, so it's sold out. Well, they're not sold out, so, you know.
That's good to know. That's good to know.
That's the deal.
Then May 31st in Chicago, a matinee show, an afternoon show.
Yep.
Also. We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com. Very good. This Sunday, by the way, Extreme Rules. WWE's Sunday special, formerly known as pay-per-views, still are known as pay-per-views because they still are on pay-per-view. And we will have coverage of that in half hour after the show ends right here on the PW Torch livecast. You can find this show live or on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. We are the number one pro wrestling talk show that you can find every day that is hosted by full-time journalists covering the sport of professional wrestling. And we are here Monday through Friday and after major WWE pay-per-views and some TNA pay-per-views on Sunday nights. Monday, Bruce Mitchell, who has contributed to this show and is standing by to ask more questions and follow-ups. He is the senior columnist for Pro Wrestling Torch. He's joined by Travis Bryant every Monday in the one-hour lead-up to Monday Night Raw at pwtorchlivecast.com. You can also listen to Travis Bryant and his host, Dre, talk wrestling at length on their show, our sister program, which is the East Coast Cast, available at blogtalkradio.com/EastCoastCast. And then I host right here the live cast on Tuesdays with Jason Powell of the great website prowrestling.net, and we are on at 5:30 Eastern, and usually we dedicate most of the show to discussing Monday Night Raw from the night before and other breaking news stories, again, taking live phone calls throughout the show and email questions. Wednesdays, Pat McNeil hosts with a special guest, often wrestlers, oftentimes indie wrestlers or ex-wrestlers who are off the radar a little bit from a lot of people who just focus on Raw. And it's a really good show to check out if you want to learn about different side of the business than just what happened on Raw this week and the top stories of the week. And then Thursdays, James Caldwell, the assistant editor of PWTorch.com, is joined by Greg Parks, the Torch columnist. And then Fridays is Interview Friday. But again, this Sunday night, a half hour after Extreme Rules ends, join us here live at PWTorchLivecast.com for a call-in post-game show. And if you're new to the livecast, you can get archived interviews at PWTorchLivecast.com with Jake Roberts, AJ Styles, Diamond Dallas Page, Hardcore Holly, Just Incredible, Sean Waltman, known as X-Pac, 123 Kid, many ex-WWE writers, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Jerry Lynn, Jerry Jarrett, Jimmy Hart, NWA referee, Tommy Young, Million Dollar Man, Teddy Biasi, J.J. Dillon, Mickey James, Scott Hall, Nikita Koloff, and so many more. Heck, TNA president Dixie Carter was on the show. Goldust, Rhino, the late Paul Bearer did two long interviews with us in 2012, and so much more. Those are in the archives. The full interviews, unedited and now ad-free, the new ones are ad-free, all of the unedited ones, which means you get the VIP after show also available one click away when you're a VIP member on the VIP website. So lots of advantages going VIP, and the place to go for that, again, is pwtorch.com/go-VIP. Jim Ross is my guest. Bruce Mitchell, Torch Senior Columnist, is co-hosting the show. And I want to go to an email question, Jim, following up on talking about announcing. And this is Jay from North Carolina. And he said, he'd love to hear you speak about this, Jim. I was watching Starrcade 87 on the network, and it had my two favorite commentators on commentary, Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross. I had no idea those two would work together, although I assume they had at least for a few years. So my question is basically, what was your relationship like with Tony? I know Tony has openly spoken about how he was never that into wrestling, so that's something that always seemed odd to me. Jim, your thoughts on Tony?
We roomed together. We traveled together. The only tension we ever had was when Turner made the decision to put Tony in syndication for most of his work and put me on TBS. There was a little tension there, but it wasn't created by he or I. That was a Turner decision. Never did we ever have any personal issues. We've reconnected. I talked to him on the phone the other day for a good while. He's got a bunch of our products, or sending a box of barbecue sauce and mustard and ketchup, and he's going to be a guest on my podcast in July, because he does Gwinnett Braves Baseball, among many other multitasking projects with WSB Radio and the Braves organization. So he has a break. I think it's an all-star break or something in July that we'll tape a podcast. But we really basically got along just fine. When we did the first Clash of Champions there in Greensboro, that was kind of a bucket list thing for me, because I think that was the first time I was ever in the Greensboro Coliseum. And as a sports and a wrestling fan, that was and is a famous facility. And then, of course, it was the first Clash of Champions. That was kind of a big moment for Turner. And Tony did the play-by-play, and I did the color. I was the Bob Cottle role, and I had no issues doing it. It wasn't an ego thing. Well, I want to be the first to speak, or I'll welcome us back from breaks, and all the things a play-by-play guy does. So I had a good time working with Tony. He was bright, and he prepared, and no issues. His first love is baseball, but there's nothing. My first love is football, but it doesn't mean that we can't distinguish ourselves within the world of wrestling. And I probably was a little bit more of a wrestling freak than him, but that's arguable, perhaps. But his first love, without question, was baseball, and now he's getting to live his dream, and I'm happy for him. He's doing good, and we're staying in touch. So that's a good thing. That's one thing that Twitter kind of helps with, because I followed him and he followed me, and then we were able to direct message and then exchange phone numbers, and off we go. So
there's a whole generation. A whole generation, Jim, who don't know how difficult it was to connect to old friends until Facebook and Twitter came around. I mean, it's just so taken for granted by, younger people today.
Yep.
It was tough chasing them down. Let's go back to the phone lines, and let's go to error code 562. This is Ruben J., I believe, calling. What city are you calling from today, Ruben?
Hey, from Los Angeles. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim Ross today?
Hey, Jim. First of all, I wanted to say this last WrestleMania with the Daniel Bryan moment, winning the championship, could have really used your enthusiasm and your broadcasting. I really missed that this year. But my question for you is, I'm currently a red carpet interviewer, and I do a bunch of stuff in entertainment, and I've been wanting to break into wrestling, and I just don't know, you know, how to go about it. I wonder if you had any advice for people who want to break into, like, the announcing side of professional wrestling.
Well, Ruben, I would put together a reel, and the reel of you working as an interviewer or a broadcaster, and it certainly doesn't have to be in wrestling. The basic, again, we're going back to that word fundamentals, the fundamental skills of how you enunciate your posture, your appearance overall, and that's not easy for me to say. You got three bouts of Bell's palsy, and you're not really HD friendly, but you just build yourself a reel of your work. And depending on what you do for your day job, take every opportunity that you can to do your work, even if it's not paid. Unless broadcasting is your gig, you got to make money. But if you are just trying to get into the wrestling world, the WWE or whatever, they're going to want a reel. They're going to want a resume. They're going to want to see you and hear you. And if they like what they see and hear, then they'll bring you in for an audition. And then you can do their style these days of storytelling and or color or interviewing, whatever. But you got to understand that what they're looking for is a different. They're not looking for guys like me. They're looking for storytellers and narrators, which is fine. It's their ball game, but you need to know your audience, as they say. You need to know who's hiring you. But they're going to want a reel and a resume, and keep your fingers crossed. But get all the practice that you can, and put your best work on a reel that's about 2 or 3 minutes long, and say your prayers, take your vitamins.
Ruben, thanks for the call. Any follow up?
No, just thank you. I mean, I appreciate the advice, and hopefully, hopefully we'll see you do something with the WWE Network.
Yeah, good luck, man.
Great. Thanks, Ruben. Appreciate your VIP membership, too. Really appreciate your support. Jim, I want to relive some memories of your great calls over the years. This is via Twitter. We ran a contest. We're going to be giving away some $50 gift certificates to folks who tweeted and included hashtag Sherry's Berries in the tweet to our Twitter account, which is at PWTorch. I'm going to run down a few of them, and you can pick out a couple that you want to just, give maybe a few brief memories on. It is great, though. It's got to be nice as an announcer to have fans who remember literally moments in time in wrestling that are enhanced by the way that you called the match and the genuine excitement and the way with words that you had. And I said it years ago that the day that you left wrestling as an announcer, unless there was a magnificent replacement, it would change the way that I watched wrestling. It seemed like, with all due respect to Michael Cole and all the challenges he faces with the way shows are produced now, as Steve Austin laments often on his show too, it's just not the same. You were the last of the territory era, fundamental era. Let's treat it like a sport and act like the winner and loser counts, and we're on the edge of our seat every moment because a three count changes the universe. That type of intensity I miss, and a lot of fans miss you too. Chris Vellante on Twitter said that his best JR call was the 1996 King of the Ring when Foley was tossed off the cage. He remembers you yelling, "They've killed him." Another one was Joey Splashwater on Twitter said, favorite JR call is Austin's return match against Bischoff. Pure emotion at its best. Also, another comment was the best JR moment was the last 10 minutes of Raw before every pay-per-view doing the hard sell. I want to read a few more to you, Jim, but anything jump out on those memories or those areas of specialty for you?
Well, Foley coming off the Hell in a Cell in Pittsburgh, I think that was 98, actually, but I might be wrong.
Yep.
In any event, it was what it was. A long time ago, 16 years almost. It's amazing that people remember the exact wording, and I get reminded of that call every day. Well, somewhere on Twitter, somebody will remind me of that. And then, of course, that audio has been lifted in the magical world of technology and put on you know, NBA slam dunks and UFC fights and Jadeveon Clowney hits and different things. And then now they're picking up more of my calls. And I saw someone sent me one the other day from a hockey game where this guy, a player named Kane, scores a goal. And then they, you know, they one of my Kane calls was lifted and put on there. It's very flattering.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I really didn't know at the time that they would hang around that long, but it's pretty cool to be remembered. And the nice thing about the WWE Network is the fact that, you know, those calls are now going to be passed on to another generation. I get so many people that tweet me to say, we didn't know you were in wrestling before WWE. And I was only in it 19 years before I got to WWE, but yeah, I kind of had a cup of coffee there, but all those are good. And then that day, the sell on those pay-per-views was pretty imperative. And you kind of know, you know, I get the feeling, I get the itch when I watch Joe Rogan and Dana White do their hard sell on Fox Sports 1 before going into the pay-per-view. They do about the same, it's the same theory to create some excitement and a sense of urgency, and that's something I can't miss. And now, you know, the shows are produced to where the announcers lay out a lot and you go more of an organic with the crowd feels. I'm not a big, philosophically, I'm not there with that. But, you know, again, it's what it is. But that Foley call is reminded of me daily. Austin and Bischoff was just a great... There was a true antagonist in Bischoff who everybody wanted to see get his ass whipped. He was a great villain, and Austin was the hero, the John Wayne or whatever, and you knew that's a situation where you knew that the gunslinger was going to slay the bad guy and that Bischoff deserved everything he was going to get. So it was a very anticipated moment. And as a fan, I got caught up in the storylines like everybody else. I never played the role of a wrestling broadcaster. I never was that plaid jacket playing a character guy, except in the Man in the Moon, and that was playing Lance. And Lance was there. I still haven't figured that out. But I was never played the role. That was me being me, for better or for worse. Quite frankly, I'll take the heat for that. If it was not good, it's just me. So there's been a lot of good moments, and I get reminded of them all the time. And it's nice people that aren't forgetting.
I'll list a couple more here. Jason Jeremiah on Twitter said, Stone Cold is shaking hands with Satan himself. For the love of God, someone tell me this is not happening. That's one of his favorite moments. Another Jim Ross moment, just WrestleMania 14, Stone Cold, Stone Cold, Stone Cold. And Eric Fiera says the 2002 ladder match with Undertaker Hardy. Climb the ladder, kid. Make yourself famous. Any thoughts on those, Jim?
Well, the Austin stuff was easy because he was so over that if you're sitting at ringside and you're not being aloof or arrogant and you still let yourself be a wrestling fan, you couldn't help but get caught up in the moment. He gave me a lot of opportunities to have that bottom of the ninth walk-off home run call. And they all can't be that. But when you get one, man, you want to take it to the house on that deal. The Jeff Hardy Undertaker match was really a match or a program or a little situation on Raw that I didn't feel in the beginning because I didn't know how seriously people would take Jeff being able to beat The Undertaker. But then when they did the ladder match stipulation, which is good booking, it kind of evened the playing field a little bit that gave Jeff a better opportunity. And then the credit has to go out to Undertaker for being so generous and working with Jeff as well as he did. So they just started telling this compelling story. And I got caught up in the fact that if Jeff Hardy could beat The Undertaker, I mean, he's a made man. He's going to be famous. I kind of got into that whole Jeff Hardy thing again, but the fans kind of prompted it. So it was unfortunate to me, and I liked both the Hardy kids. I hired them both, and I've ridden, you know, it's been challenging at times with some of their issues, specifically with Jeff. But I really care for those boys. I really do like them both. I wish that they both had, when they left WWE, that they could have harnessed that potential somewhere else and really raised the bar for themselves. because I never really thought that TNA, and I'm not on a TNA knocking deal, I never thought TNA really booked Jeff as advantageously as they could and take advantage of what they had. But, you know, that's hey, everybody can bitch about booking. It's a subjective thing. There's a lot of right ways to do things in wrestling. But, you know, that was I really had a lot of emotion invested in the Hardys because I recruited them. They're wrestling fans. They were oversized. They weren't college, you know, jocks. They were just indie wrestlers that got there, got to the big dance. And Jeff Hardy had that intangible connection with the audience that, for whatever reason, they reacted to him in a real positive way.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts. A few more, and then we'll move on to a couple more calls here. Sean Ryder on Twitter, favorite JR memory, Rock Hogan, Mania 18. Hogan drops a leg, and JR shouts, he beat Andre the Giant with that move. another one, the Big Bad Grim on Twitter says, my favorite Jim Ross call was at Hell in a Cell 2011. My God, they've got bolt cutters. And also, this is from Spencer Parente, who says, HBK kicks out of the tombstone against Taker, and Ross says, I just had an out-of-body experience. Any thoughts on those, Jim?
I remember them. You know, when the people when people bring them up, you know, they you start having these flashes of a video in your head.
Yes.
And it was just it's just being a fan, Wade and Bruce. It's just being that guy that always loved the business and always respected it and respected the fans. And I didn't half-ass it, but I wasn't playing the role of this. I wasn't being an actor. Again, for better or for worse, that was me. And so it was easy to do that job for me. I never felt great pressure on being a wrestling announcer because I was just going out there and being me. And some nights I had good nights, and some nights I had horrible nights, in my view. I'm my own worst critic. There's a ton of shows that are airing now on the WWE Network that I've never gone back and watched because I didn't think it did well. There are very few pay-per-views I've gone back and rewatched. But I get reminded of the good ones, and I appreciate it. But, you know, the Undertaker, Shawn Michaels match that I got to do in Houston at WrestleMania 25 was absolutely a work of art. It was, again, Undertaker putting himself in positions that made the match believable and attainable for a smaller guy to win, even a great smaller guy like Shawn Michaels. And we forgot about size and weight and height and all that stuff. So that was just a great they had such a – one of my big regrets in the business was not broadcasting Shawn's last match. That's a big regret. But I got to do the one the year before, so, you know, as Lawler would say, one can't grieve forever.
Have you been close to announcing any matches on big shows that just didn't come to fruition because one of the wrestlers wanted you to, but it just didn't work out?
Oh, not – I know that I was told that both Shawn and Undertaker really wanted me to do the WrestleMania 26 match, but it just wasn't facilitated, and they tried. But, you know, it just didn't come to be. I think that's probably the most significant one that I'm aware of. I know that, on the other hand, when I had we were in the UK and my mom passed, and that whole weekend was a horrific weekend because I lose my 64-year-old mother suddenly. Then I get Bell's palsy on the air, and I thought that second bout of Bell's palsy was probably going to end my broadcasting career. So it wasn't a good weekend, to say the least. But I think that when I came back prematurely, my face was still sagging, and I had to hold my face up to enunciate. But Rock and Austin had gone to Vince and had really lobbied for me to call their match at WrestleMania. It was their first WrestleMania match of three. They had And so that lifted my spirits and kind of got me back in the game, because I really believe that the first bout of Bell's palsy, I didn't know what the hell it was, so I wasn't. I read about it. I got information on it. Well, it's temporary, and you know, you'll be fine in 4 weeks or 6 weeks. But, boy, the second bout was scared the heck out of me, because I just didn't think I was going to recover from it. And I kind of did, but then the third time I got it, the paralysis around my mouth. People say, well, JR's always pissed off, or JR's always bitter because he never smiles. Well, you know, if I could smile, I would have a smile you couldn't blow off with a sandblaster, but
yeah.
I can't. Yeah, I can't. That's just. But I don't let it define me. If other people have a problem with it, it's their problem. Sure as hell isn't mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put. Well put. We'll hear from more from Bruce Mitchell in the VIP after show, and we'll answer a lot more of the emails. We've got some good email topics I would not have thought to ask that we will be asking of Jim in the VIP after show. I do want to note that Jim talked about these great moments and these great calls, and that fans get to relive them on the network. I try to slip this in because we've gotten a great response from VIP members, including new ones, who have joined specifically to have access to our 26-and-a-half-year library of coverage of the pay-per-view era of wrestling. The Torch started in 1987, and we cover the vast majority of wrestling pay-per-views and have my reports on almost every single pay-per-view during that time is available when you go VIP with breakdowns of each of the matches, star ratings, Bruce Mitchell. Lines. I'm going to grab some random calls here from non-VIP members to get some of those in before we shift to the VIP after show. We're already in overtime past the live normal one-hour time slot. 443 is up next, and then 219 is on deck. 443, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Jason from Dundalk.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim?
Me?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
JR, I guess most importantly, I just wanted to say thank you as a wrestling fan and as a fellow Bell's palsy sufferer. I think it was more important for me to call and say thank you. You've made bad programs tolerable and great programs, you know, classic. So
thanks.
I just wanted to say thank you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I always do my best. And, you know, you get those hands dealt to you that are sometimes not all your favor, and you got to throw your cards in for that hand. But I never gave up. And I'm still working. I'm still busy. So it's all good. So I appreciate your sentiment very much.
Yeah. I had about two questions for you. One, do you think that Vince McMahon appreciates what you did as head of talent relations? For us fans on the outside looking in, you know, it's always well known that we don't like the way you're treated, but we also don't know all the inner workings. We kind of despise the way you've been treated, to be honest. Do you think that he appreciates what you did in your role as head of talent relations? Because that was, I mean, I've been watching forever. That was the best roster they ever had.
I think he does. He paid me well, and I gladly accepted all of his money and all the stock I got and all the other financial perks that came my way. So, you know, it's just the deal is that Vince and I have had philosophical differences over the years. I had philosophical differences with my own father, as a matter of fact, on some things, but it didn't stop me from respecting him, obviously, and loving my dad. God bless his soul. But the deal with Vince is that I would think you know, he's been very complimentary of my work as a in talent relations. I think that probably part of the angst that he and I developed after. In the latter years was because I was no longer living in Connecticut and no longer in the administrative aspect of the business, because I did do, yeah. I think, a decent job. I think I did do, I worked hard, and I was very loyal, very dedicated. But I got to tell you, he took great care of me. So I'm thinking, yeah, he appreciated it. It's just, you know, I left that role and left Connecticut and moved back to Oklahoma. I don't think it set real well with him, but I might be wrong on that too. That's just a take. Who knows?
Really appreciate the call, Jason. Any last words for Jim?
I do. I could just go on and on about how you know, JR, I got the chance to meet you in Baltimore one time. You were walking to your hotel with the Stooges. And you were very gracious. Unfortunately, in timing, because it was when you went to the UK, and then all, you know, you had the health problems and the unfortunate loss. But me and my girlfriend, we really appreciate how gracious you were. I'm sure you're in a hurry to get back to the hotel. And Wade, I just want to say thank you very much for giving us fans a chance to talk to our legends, the people that we admire in the business. And Bruce, also thank you for the great work you do. You really are my favorite columnist, and I just wanted to thank you guys.
I appreciate it, Jason, very much. And Bruce, you do too.
Thank you.
Chris Cruz, by the way, speaking of wrestling announcers, was on with Bruce Mitchell on last week's PW Torch livecast. He hosted WCW Worldwide Wrestling with Terry Funk. It was a one of my favorite periods in terms of wrestling announced pairs. They didn't last a long time, but boy, did they get heavy praise during their time together. They had great chemistry. Chris Cruz talked with Bruce Mitchell on last Friday's PW Torch livecast, and you can find that show at pwtorchlivecast.com. Chris Cruz told some stories about working for the WWF in the lead-up to WrestleMania 1. He worked in the PR department, and other amazing stories. Really good interview. Good job, Bruce, on that one. And Chris Cruz made it easy for you, though, didn't he?
He did. I want to thank the last caller, too. I think I had my mute button on, but appreciate it. Yeah, Chris, you know, someone that worked in WWE on WrestleMania 1 and then was at WrestleMania 30 backstage. So lots of things to talk about with him.
Absolutely. And Cruz, yeah, Cruz, a really good interview. And, yeah, I absolutely recommend going out of your way to listen to that. All right, up next, area code 219. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Mike from Indiana.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim Ross today?
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to ask you a question. I recall when you were a host on Radio WWF about 20 years ago, and somebody had called and asked you a question about Jesse Ventura, and you said Jesse Ventura was a fool. So my question was that a work or a shoot? And if it was a shoot,
he was a heel.
Do you still think that?
He was a heel, and I was a baby face, and I was just having fun. Probably some people misinterpret my sarcastic sense of humor.
I know.
Because on TV all those years, unless the only person I really had issues with were heels. Paul Heyman, you know, Lawler when he was a heel. That kind of thing. So, my natural sense of humor is a little bit dry and can be a little caustic if you don't get it. And so that's maybe my fault in the presentation. I don't know. Jesse and I don't hate Jesse Ventura. We never were very close. I thought that our partnership in WCW underdelivered, and that was because of me. I've written about that. I've blogged about it podcast, I think I addressed that once on a podcast. The deal was my own ego. When I found out what he was earning, and he was working part-time, and he was making approximately three times what I was earning, and I was working all the time, I mean literally all the time, it pissed me off, and my ego interfered, just being honest. And I think that we didn't have the chemistry that I wish we would have had. But I don't blame that on Jesse. I blame that on myself. We should have been a lot better than we were. But, you know, I didn't – all my partners I work with, other than Jesse, I've been able to develop a rapport with. And I went out of my way to make sure we had a rapport. And I didn't do that with Jesse because I knew coming in what he was getting paid. And I knew what I was getting paid, and I took that personally. And should have been on me and the management, not – me and Jesse. So I always take the blame for that. But we don't always agree politically. We worked together on the XFL. No worries.
That's right.
You know, he's a very unique guy, and he's got very strong opinions, which are fine. And some of them I share and some I don't. So that's just, but I certainly don't hate him. I don't hate anybody I've ever worked with or been around.
Jesse and I worked together at the same time at KFAN radio back in the early 90s when he was the Minnesota Vikings color commentator, and he stirred controversy at KFAN too with the way he handled himself and the lack of rapport, honestly, he had with the producers and his broadcast team. And he came on my Pro Wrestling Focus show, which again is available for VIP members in our audio archives, and talked about that controversy with the Vikings and also jumping from the WWF to WCW. So people are interested more in that that chapter in wrestling announcing in Jesse's history can get Jesse talking about it firsthand with me back on one of those old radio shows. Up next, air code 270, you're on with Jim Ross on PW Torch Livecast. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Wayne.
Yes.
Is this me?
It is you.
Okay. Hey, I...
name and city, please. Name and city, please.
This is Todd in Columbia. First time, long time.
Awesome.
Hey, I have been a wrestling historian, I guess, for about 40 years, and Jim, I've always wanted to ask you this question, so I'm really excited about this. I am a big fan of Jerry Lawler growing up in Tennessee, and as a wrestling historian, I read a lot of what authors write, you know, the ECW press books and a lot of stuff on where Lawler fits into the history of pro wrestling and the greats list. Because of his tenure and because of all he's done in the business, I always seem to think that, and of course it's the homer in me, I always think he should be rated higher, and I just wonder where you think Jerry Lawler fits in the tapestry of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and also what is his relationship with Heyman and Cornette?
Mm-hmm.
Those three always seem to just have this long history together that I'd love to hear you comment on. And I really appreciate and respect your what you've done in the sport.
Well, thanks. I would put Jerry, looking at his entire body of work, from the time he started and his longevity, to me, Jerry's a top 10 guy of all time. He was very effective as a babyface. He was very effective as a heel. He was as good a promo guy as you're going to find. He was able to stay over in one city, in one territory, for an inordinate amount of time. I don't know of anybody that's ever been over in a territory longer than Lawler. You know, Pat Patterson had about 15 years in San Francisco, and there have been other guys, you know, I guess, you know, Vern never left Minnesota, but there are guys in that same conversation. All I'm saying is that Jerry, from a booker, a heel, babyface, on-air talent, it was a broadcaster. I gotta have him in the top 10. As far as, because some of his work that people aren't familiar with, that you know, it's too bad that library in Memphis, it was kind of like the old proverbial redheaded stepchild. It's had a lot of homes, and I don't know where I don't know if it's all intact in one place today or not. I'm sure if it was, it would be WWE would have it bought. So they haven't bought it. So it tells me that there are issues there with that. I don't think Lawler and Cornette have any issues that I'm aware of. Lawler was one of Cornette's heroes when Cornette was growing up in Louisville. I'm unaware if they do. Now, at one time, there was issues between Heyman and Lawler, but you know, I think over the years it was kind of glorified or underscored because Jerry went to work, did some shots in ECW. Jerry booked Heyman in Memphis when Paul was just getting this role going as a manager. I'm thinking that by today, and I'm not around them, but I don't know that there's any major issues whatsoever in today's world with Lawler and Heyman, but there was some issues over the years. And generally when you get an administrator, like Lawler was a booker, and you have a falling out with the talent, it's always over two things. I say this all the time, the two C's. Cash or creative. You can look at almost any ill-fated relationship, professional relationship in pro wrestling, and when they go south, it's generally over cash or creative. So I would assume that's what it probably was over, but I don't think there's any significant issues there now at all. But again, you know, I'm home like most everybody listening and watching Monday Night Raw when Lawler's on, and you know, I don't detect any hint in his voice that he's still pissed off at Paul Heyman for something.
Very good. Appreciate that. Let's take one more call before we move to the VIP after show. Our time is limited, so I apologize to everybody on hold. Hopefully we can do this again, Jim, sometime down the line and take more live calls. Let's go next to I'm going to try to find an area code I don't recognize just to reward somebody who might be a first-time caller. 912. Please state the name and your and the city you're calling from, 912.
Marcus from Savannah.
Hey, Marcus, thanks for calling. Are you a first-time caller?
I call every once in a while.
Every once in a while, okay. Well, go ahead. What have you got for Jim today?
Yes, I just wanted to know about the promo Jim did that night on Vince McMahon, the night they debuted the fake Razor Ramon. I was just wondering, what did you have any certain like script you had to stay within, or did you have free range to say what you felt? Because it sounded like
I was given bullet points. I was given bullet points to get in the promo, but nobody handed me a script for me to memorize, if that's what you're getting at. It was before everything was really written out word for word. So I was given a bullet points, and I remember, I think that interview was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And the night before, I believe we had a pay-per-view in Philly, and I was riding with Jerry Briscoe from Philly to Hershey. And I had been given the bullet points of what I was going to do the next night so I could prepare. And I kind of used Jerry as my muse, or whatever you'd say. The poor son of a gun had to hear that promo for all that drive, all that night, late night, after we worked all day and night. And he told me at the end of the night, when we finally got there, he said, "Well, I'm glad that the next time I hear that promo will be the last time I have to hear it." But he said, "If you can pull it off, it's really going to be good." But the idea of the fake Razor and Diesel was kind of lame. But, you know, my deal was not to judge creative. My deal was to go out and perform and do what I was asked to do. And, you know, it's that old theory, man. It's that old Southern mentality. I guess it's everybody's blue-collar mentality. You can take a man's money, do the job that he wants you to do, and the day you can't do that, then stop taking the checks. And I really like the checks, and I like saving that money. So for now, when I'm older, I ain't got to worry about working. That was good. But would that be a pipe bomb promo in today's pipe bomb terminology?
Probably. Probably. The coverage of that Razor, the fake Razor and fake Diesel moment was a cover story in the Pro Wrestling Torch that week. And, oh, man, I remember writing that story and trying to figure out, you know, I wasn't mincing words, but I was like, how do you even cover something so odd like this and trying to figure out where they're going with it? It was
just a corporate angle. It was getting back at Turner, and all those guys had gone down to Atlanta. And, you know, it was all good. Yeah. I was, you know, put in that role to be that guy, and it's funny, versus, well, how did you like your heel run? I said, are you kidding me? How long was that? First of all, I never thought I was very good at anything I did in the ring aside announcing.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't like doing it, but I did it because that was my assignment. That's how I was booked. You're old school guy. You get booked, you go do your job. If you're picked to lose, you lose. If you're picked to win, you win. But do your job, and that's what I did on that night. So, but I never thought it was very good. I didn't think I was a good heel. I didn't think it lasted. The thing was kind of short-lived, and, you know, but again, you know, it's like being a football player. You know, hey, you're not going to start, JR, but you're going to be on the special teams. Okay. Team player, let's go play. So that's what we did.
Hey, did you ever come close to saying no to anything?
No, nothing. I mean, if you're going to kiss McMahon's ass in Oklahoma City, that pretty well covers all the bases. What would you
want to do?
There were a couple of things when I did the angle with Michael Cole in the ring that one of the agents, I don't remember who it was, it might have been Michael Hayes, I can't recall, or Laurinaitis, wanted me to do that I just physically couldn't get done.
Yeah,
and we called an audible because, you know, I never had any wrestling training. I never was trained to take bumps. Obviously, anybody seeing me in the ring can testify to all these things I'm saying. The only thing that was a salvation is that they didn't make me wear. I probably would have said no to having to wear tights.
Yeah,
you know, because going out there and look like I just had a litter of pups is not my exact dream performance. So thank God I could stay clothed. But
poor Howard Finkel.
I didn't need that. I didn't need that. Howard's enough, bless his heart. So I never, it's what I learned from Bill. It's what I learned from my old man. I used to work and do all these chores on our farm as an only child when I was 9, 10, 12 years old, stayed by myself in the summertime. But if I did my chores and I did everything my dad laid out for me to do, I got to watch wrestling on Saturday. So my caveat for doing all my stuff right and doing my schoolwork during the school year was I got to watch wrestling on Saturday. And my dad wasn't a big wrestling fan, so he let me watch the hour of wrestling at 4 o'clock. And then it got even more extreme because wrestling started coming on at 10:30 after the late local news, 10:30 Central. So for me to be able to stay up to 10:30 to watch wrestling was a huge deal because my bedtime on the weekends was 9 o'clock, and my bedtime on the school night was 8 o'clock.
Wow.
So for me to get that 10:30 thing, that took some negotiation and some had to be have some, and productivity. So that was a matter of learning responsibilities and doing what I was told to do, following through. And I saw, and then Bill, when I got to work for Bill, I did so damn many different jobs for Bill, it was ridiculous. I mean, I did a little bit of everything, and some of them I didn't like, but at the end of the day, they all helped me understand the business better. And that's how I looked at when I went to work for WCW and I went to work for Vince. I did what I was instructed to do to try to be a good employee. And that's simple as that. And sometimes I like how I was cast, sometimes I didn't. I'm sure an actor would tell you the same thing, and I'm sure that ball players that played on multiple teams will tell you, well, that was my favorite team. I loved playing for the Twins, and when they traded me to Pittsburgh, I didn't like it. Okay, so that's the story. We all got a story like that.
Jim, we will address a few more topics that I've saved, some good hot topics for the VIP After Show for our paid subscribers, and we appreciate you sticking around for a few more minutes. Let us know on the other side of the music if your time is limited. But I do want to thank you for the time you've given us here on the free portion on PW Torch Livecast. And you can find this show and all our shows on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. If you're new to the show, we interviewed right here on Interview Friday on pwtorchlivecast.com, Scott Hall, our listeners, for the great calls and the great email questions we're about to answer on the VIP After Show. If you're not VIP, go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. And also, just a final mention of our sponsor, Sherry's Berries. Tonight, before the show went on the air, we're talking about how delicious Sherry's Berries are. We have both enjoyed our complimentary boxes this week from Sherry's Berries. And thanks to Bruce Mitchell. We'll hear from more from Bruce on the other side of the music. That is the end of the free live cast. VIP members, hold tight on the other side of the music. Some really hot topics. Can't wait to get to. PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/goVIP.
Now